Welcome back, friends. We are excited to beam you on board for episode 37 of the Shuttle Pod. My name is Jared. I'm one of your hosts, and I'm joined by my good friend, Brian.
Hello, everybody.
Today is the 13th of June. It's 13th of June for me. It's the 12th of June for Brian. And we are excited for this subject. We're going to be talking about games related to the Star Trek universe, video games, tabletop games, etc. But we didn't want to take just a moment to recognize a very special contributor to pop culture in America for the last four years. Brian, I'm sure you were sad as I was to see that Adam West died a few days ago.
Yeah, it was sad.
Yeah,
another part of our childhoods disappeared.
Yet another. I mean, 2017 is not taking as many celebrities as 2016 did, but it's still sad to see someone like this go.
It is. He was very unique, in a unique niche in pop culture, Adam West. I mean, he was clearly typecast as Batman, and, you know, to his detriment, it was hard for him to get a lot of other work. But at the same time, much like, you know, say the actors in the original Star Trek, there is a certain odd kind of immortality that comes from being typecast as a famous
character.
Sure.
It's better than, you know, it being a one-hit wonder is always better than being a no-hit wonder.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it took him a while to understand that, mm-hmm. but he did ultimately. I think even up last year, like, they put out that animated movie that he did the voice
of. Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, he was back, him and Burt Ward and Julie Newmar all returned to their roles.
Oh, cool.
So he did learn to embrace the character, and, you know, he was great. I always have fond memories of him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was my first exposure to the Batman mythos was his TV shows. And, you know, they're so campy and over the top. You look at it now and think, oh, that's ridiculous. But it wasn't that unusual for the time. And I heard this saying that there were three B's of the 1960s, Bond, the Beatles, and Batman. And to be in that company is not bad news, right?
No, hell no.
The other thing I've heard, and I don't know how true this is, but the Batman character for, you know, the first few decades of its existence was nowhere near as popular as the Superman character. And the Batman 66 TV show was sort of taking off following the example of the Superman show that had been on air with George Reeves several years earlier.
George Reeves.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard it said that the Batman character was very unpopular, and that TV show was what revitalized it. And so whenever people dog on the Adam West Batman, I always say, if it weren't for Adam West, you probably wouldn't be talking about Batman.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, it's funny how perception changes, too, about that show. Like, for instance, when the Tim Burton Batman movie came out in 89, like, they went to great pains to remind everybody that this is not the campy 60s show. And the show itself was very much looked down upon in general, I think, by fandom in 1989.
Sure.
Because, you know, we're getting into serious superheroes now.
We're so grown up.
Yeah. And so for a while, I think that perception stuck to it. But, you know, time has a way of making people reevaluate things. And I think people now appreciate that show for the gem that it actually was.
Oh, sure.
It's a fun show.
It doesn't try to be anything more
than what it is.
Yeah, and it's so distinct and so memorable. And every time you see a headline about some kind of superhero property that starts with, like, Biff, Pow, or whatever, they're doing that because of the Adam West Batman series.
Yep. And Adam West has a small Trek connection.
Yeah.
I guess a year before the original series began, William Shatner did a pilot that was going to be a series about the exploits of Alexander the Great, and with Shatner playing the lead. And Adam West was one of the characters. I forget his name.
General Cleander.
Very good.
Oh, I'm looking at it. That was not from memory.
Okay.
That's the internet.
You could have lied and said it was, and I would have been very impressed.
No, I am reading this off the Trek Movie Facebook page right now.
Oh, okay. So that's kind of cool, you know, because it was like before both of them literally on the cusp of taking on roles that was going to define both their careers.
Yeah, so that's kind of a a blessing in disguise for them in the long run that this show never got picked up.
Yeah, I suppose it was. Yeah, because it might have just been one of those series that ran for 4 or 5 years and then faded away, yeah, never to be heard from again.
And somebody else became Batman and somebody else became Captain Kirk.
That's right.
I when I saw William Shatner's one-man show in Philadelphia a few years ago, you know, he's there, up there, and he's got a chair, and he's talking and running around, and, you know, just so much energy for a man his age, or for any age.
Mm-hmm.
And pictures would flash from his career would flash in the background. And there's at one point where a picture of him as Alexander the Great went up there, and, you know, he's basically shirtless. He's just wearing the toga, and he's got this stern mm-hmm. look on his face. And, you know, he's just in the prime of life. And as soon as that goes up, people start, like, cheering. And you know, kind of not like an ooh type of thing, but basically that. Mm. And he said when he saw that, when he heard that, he said, "I'm not even going to look around. I'm not going to look at what picture you guys are so excited about. It's too sad for me." Yeah. Have you seen his one-man show?
No, I decided – I regret it now, but at the time he was doing it, I didn't think he had any new stories to tell that I hadn't already heard a million times.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? You know, I'm going to pass on this. As it turned out, that was a mistake. Because from what I am, but based on what you've told me and other people I know who have seen it, it was well worth going to.
Yeah, he told this story about watching the moon landing that was very endearing, that was really touching.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard that. See, I've heard that story.
Oh, okay. Well, but even still, from I hadn't.
No, I agree.
To tell it was nice. Well, the other thing I just want to say about Adam West is I had always wanted them to do a reboot of the Grumpy Old Men series with Shatner and West. I thought that would have been cool. Some project for the two of them.
That would have been really cool.
Yeah.
Shatner is doing a movie right now with Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, interesting. I haven't heard about this.
Yeah, it's like some sort of comedy thing that they're doing. I don't know much more about it than that, but I thought that was kind of cool, you know.
Yeah, that is cool. With a
couple of the old guys getting together.
Yeah, that maybe at one point Kirk can kick him in the face and tell him that he's had enough of him.
It wouldn't surprise me if something like that is in the script.
Yeah, somewhere. It'd have to be. It'd have to be.
You have to have a nod to it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so rest in peace, Adam West.
And thank you. Thank you for everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Brian, what else do we want to talk about today?
Well, we've been excited about the upcoming launch of Discovery, obviously, and there hasn't been the trailer debuted, I guess, about a month ago now.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were justifiably, you know, excited about that, and we discussed it here on the podcast and everything. And I think we kind of figured we'd have a bit more to talk about by now. And the trailer debuted and the production went right back into radio silence like it's been for the almost pretty much since it launched in January. So we're hoping to really start digging into Discovery once we have more things to actually talk about. So in lieu of talking about Discovery today, we thought we would talk about something that, you know, most of us have rubbed up against at one time or another, which is Star Trek games. Video games, board games, RPGs, card games.
Yeah.
All sorts of, you know, those ancillary products that most of us glommed onto at one time or another in our fandom.
Yeah, and games are a really important way for people to access a franchise because you're able to be a part of it in a more active role. You're not just watching it. You're not watching Captain Kirk. You are Captain Kirk, or you are your own person,
right?
Inside that universe. And I've played, you know, one or two different Star Trek role-playing games, not for a long time. I'm a pretty active board gamer, and so there have been a couple of Star Trek board games that have been great. I have not as much gotten to the video games, but Brian, I know you had an experience recently with the Star Trek Bridge Crew game, which looks like it's pretty cool.
Yeah. For those of you that may or may not know, a virtual reality game called Star Trek Bridge Crew came out a couple of weeks ago that is available for all the, like, you know, the PlayStation VR, the Oculus Rift, and the HTC Vive. It's the first Star Trek virtual reality game ever. The core game takes place in the Kelvin timeline aboard a ship called the USS Aegis, and your task is to explore this uncharted area of space to help the Vulcans find a new homeworld to colonize. After, you know, obviously after in the 09 movie, the Vulcans lost their planet, so you're helping them try to locate a new one. So there's a story arc there, and, you know, you're on this bridge. The design of this, you know, it's very reminiscent, obviously, of the Kelvin Enterprise, but not completely. It's its own design. And, you know, the virtual reality now has gotten so good. Like, you know, you put the visor on, and you're there, man. Like, you know, I've got the motion controls in my hand. I own a PlayStation VR. And so you have these two motion controllers in your hand. You've got the visor on your head. And, you know, you've got panels in front of you, like, you know, touch screens in front of you. And you're pressing controls. You're rerouting systems and engineering. You're doing this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, you could play this alone, or you can play with up to, you know, three other friends so that you're all together, like on a ship. And I have to tell you, the sense of being there is pretty powerful.
Oh, wow.
It really is.
Nice.
It's pretty remarkable. I mean, this is like fan fulfillment kind of stuff. But we all wanted to always be on the Enterprise,
yeah, you know,
growing up. And this puts you on a Federation starship with all of the sound effects and everything else. It's a lot of fun. And the bonus content is also obviously of interest to a lot of people. The bonus is that they recreated the Enterprise, the original series Enterprise bridge,
oh,
in virtual reality.
So like you can unlock it type of thing?
No, it's unlocked automatically. It's just that it doesn't have a story built around it. You can use it to fly randomized missions. Like, the computer will generate random new missions for you guys to go on and stuff like that. But obviously, since we all know the original series bridge so well,
sure,
when that bridge loads and you're sitting like in the captain's chair, wherever you happen to be sitting, the effect is extremely powerful.
Oh, wow.
Because we've all been watching the original series, you know, even if you weren't, isn't your favorite show, we've all been watching that show since we were little kids. And you are on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. You're on James Kirk's Enterprise.
Wow.
They went up to Fort Ticonderoga, where James Cawley has the Star Trek New Voyages sets, which is now a tour up in upstate New York.
Okay.
And they mapped out every button. Like, they took measurements of how far the bridge railing was to Kirk's command
chair.
Holy
cow.
So when you're and James's reproductions are pretty spot on. So, I mean, when you're sitting down, you're getting a pretty good sense of what the bridge of the Enterprise was like, you know? So that's pretty cool. It's a little harder to navigate that ship though, because, you know, in the original series, you know, there were no readouts on those consoles.
No. They weren't computers.
No, they weren't computers. So, you know, I think Walter Koenig used to joke that, like, you know, if he was feeling envious one day, he'd hit the green button. If he was feeling angry one day, he'd hit the red button. You know what I mean? Because it didn't matter. It was all nonsense.
Yeah,
You know, those controls didn't have any readouts on them, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But when you're trying to make a video game out of it, it's a little more complicated. So, like, they've had to build, like, you know, they had to put labels on that you can turn on and off that'll let you know, here's where the warp factor is and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. We sent a crew to Ubisoft headquarters. Ubisoft is the developer of the game. And we sent a bunch of folks up there to San Francisco, to their headquarters in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And they took out for a test run a couple of weeks ago. And we will be publishing the video for that probably tomorrow.
Oh,
which will be
great.
Tuesday the 13th.
So by the time this airs, it'll already be on our site.
Yeah, it'll be online, so if anybody wants to have a look at it.
Great.
It goes through both. It goes through both the Aegis and the Enterprise, and then it's done from a Star Trek fan's perspective. A lot of these videos we've been seeing online are very much from a gamer perspective. And we wanted to have Star Trek fans go in there and tell us, does this really make you know, is this up to snuff? Because there's a lot of, and we'll get into this now, but there's been a lot of crappy Star Trek games.
Sure.
Historically, there's a lot more bad ones than good ones.
Yeah, yeah, and we'll get into why that is a little bit later.
Yeah, but anyway, to make it long story short, this is definitely worth playing. I don't know if it's worth all the outlay to go out and get a virtual reality set just to play it.
Sure.
Because it does have a certain shelf life to it, the mission aspect of it, you know, the core game that they built. Is fairly short. The campaign is fairly short. I don't know if they're planning on adding more adventures available to download or not. As of right now, there's no information on that. That would be the only drawback to it. But I have to tell you can't beat the visceral thrill of being on that bridge. I'm sure. And if you have enough friends to play with, I mean,
yeah,
you can go hours and hours and hours. I mean,
so there's, you know, but so there's really that much gameplay.
There is. What do you mean?
Well, I'm sorry, because you said that the core adventure was very short.
The core campaign. It's fairly short.
But then there's more you can do beyond that?
Yes, there's randomized story missions where the computer
will
create random missions.
All right.
But like I said, after a certain point, that will run out. Like, there's just not enough variety, I think, there right now. So I don't know if I would recommend anybody like running out the door to buy a virtual reality headset just for this.
If they don't already have one.
Right. But it is a good first start. I mean, it's the potential for virtual reality is very obvious.
Mm.
It's clearly the direction we'll go. How quickly we get there, I can't really speculate to that. But,
you know, I remember like 20 years ago, the first time people started talking about virtual reality, and I had a friend play a virtual reality game. And I remember thinking, okay, well, this is going to happen sooner rather than later. And it's been very much like 3D movies. It's weird to me that this didn't take off a little bit more and a little bit sooner.
Well, I don't think the tech was there properly until now.
Is it one of those things where it was kind of oversold before we got to that point?
Yes, I think so.
Or it made promises. I think so. It made promises that it couldn't deliver.
Yes. Yeah. Now you're starting to see the potential of it. Like, you know, you put that headset on, you turn your head any way you want, you're going to be able to look wherever you want and with no lag of any kind.
Oh, wow. You know,
I mean, it's very much a you are there thing. Like, I can't, it's hard to describe to someone how powerful it can kind of be when you first put the headset on. You kind of have to experience it yourself. But the potential for the technology is very obvious. So anyway, it's a fun game. It's definitely one of the better Star Trek games to come down the pike in quite a while.
Oh, good. Good.
So that's the good news.
Well, if I ever get the chance to try it, I'll have to. I certainly don't own Oculus Rift, PlayStation VR, or an HTC Vive platform. But maybe there's a chance I can play with somebody who does own one at some point.
Yeah, you can come over to my place anytime.
There we go. Okay. Well, now you're talking. maybe I was dropping a hint that that's I wanted that invitation. Now you mentioned that a lot of Star Trek video games don't hit, and why more don't hit than do. Well, why do you think that is? What is there a problem the franchise has with that kind of adaption?
I think a lot of the game designers want to create an action-oriented Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And while that can work, there are fun Star Trek games that are very, you know, action-oriented shooters and whatnot. I think most Star Trek fans are not into Star Trek for the combat. They're in it for the exploration and the puzzle solving and stuff like that. And so I think there's been a lot of disappointment over the years.
Yeah, it's
far more disappointment than success.
Oh, completely, completely. It's very easy to make a game where you shoot things. It's very difficult to make a game where the objective is to not shoot things. I mean, the thing I always think about is there's this TNG episode called The Defector, one of the best episodes ever, where this
it was very good.
Yeah, where Romulan defects and says to Picard, "We have to do this, or there's going to be a war with the Romulans. And I love the Romulans, but I don't want this war to happen." And the climax is it's Captain Picard and Captain Tomalak squaring off, and that's when the two warbirds show up, and it looks like Picard is outmaneuvered, and then three Klingon ships decloak, and Picard has outmaneuvered them. And Tomalak says, "You will not survive our assault." And Picard says, "You will not survive ours. Do we die together or not at all?" And the climax of the episode, of this great story, is people not shooting at each other. And it's like, that's terrific. It's wonderful. It's a great message. But how do you make a video game about that?
Yeah. Yeah. To me, Star Trek games are mostly at their best when they are adventure, straight, more traditional adventure games, point and click,
adventure. Like, did you ever play the 25th anniversary game or the sequel, Judgment Rights?
Many times. For those who may not remember what those are, those were Interplay released those in the early 90s. They featured the original cast and the voices of the original cast.
Yeah, last
which made them very popular for that reason alone.
Last time DeForest Kelly ever played Dr. McCoy.
Played Dr. McCoy, that's right. Both those games are a lot of fun. They were both written, I believe, by Dorothy Fontana.
Oh, cool. I didn't realize that.
I think I'm going to probably get in trouble for this, but I think I'm pretty sure Dorothy Fontana at least had some role in getting the stories together for it. And they were a blast. They were an absolute blast.
Yeah, I remember, I think I got the first one for my birthday and just played it into the ground. And it had like seven or eight different episodes, and they were mm-hmm. just straight up adventures where you're doing like a little bit of puzzle solving. And there's a lot of interaction among the crew, and it's like Captain Kirk can ask Spock what he thinks he should do, and Spock will say something, or he can ask the security guard what he thinks he should do. And it wasn't that there was an action component. There was like a space combat simulator, but it was mostly walking around the ground exploring stuff. And it was very similar to like the King's Quest games that were popular at the time.
Yep.
And so it captured the zeitgeist of video games before they became really violent in the 90s with first-person shooters like Doom.
Mm-hmm.
And, I love those games. I never played Judgment Rights until just a couple years ago when they were selling a copy of it on the website GOG.com or Good Old Games.
Right, for like, Good Old Games.
Yeah, for like $5. And I said, yeah, why wouldn't I do this?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Those were great.
Yeah, and they had like, you know, your library computer you could access so you could get clues about the planet you were going to beam down to before you went down there. Mm-hmm. And then the music was terrific. They did the over the top kind of dun, 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 stuff from the original series. Yep. That's so iconic. Very well executed.
Yeah. Yeah. They were labors of love. You could tell by the people who made the game, you could tell were big fans. The level of detail, like no stone was left unturned. You can tell sometimes when the developers of these games are big fans just by the amount of detail. Like, for instance, Bridge Crew has a level of detail in it that would only be there, I think.
If there's the love.
If there's the love in that game. Just to backtrack for a sec, that game has a lot of love put in it. The sound effects, everything is so spot on. Anyway, back to where we were.
Sure. Sure. And then I think one of the problems with Star Trek video games is after this, like I mentioned, as video games started to become a little bit more violent, it just wasn't Trek appropriate. I mean, you shouldn't have a first-person shooter of Captain Janeway running around the Voyager, and all you ever see of her is the barrel of a phaser rifle and her shooting species 8412.
Right. Wasn't that Elite Force, right?
Yeah. Exactly. That's the one I'm referencing.
Yeah, that game was actually very good.
8472, 8472, excuse me.
Yeah, species 8472.
So that game was good.
It was for first person shooters go in a Star Trek universe. Yeah, it was good. It was a very like well made game.
Huh. I remember watching a Let's Play from some YouTube personality a few years ago on that. But I never played it. I missed that one. I think that had the voices though of Tim Russ and everybody from Voyager.
It did. I think I don't know if you've ever played this one. My favorite game, at Star Trek game that's probably come out in the past 15 years is Bridge Commander. Did you ever play that?
No, I didn't. I've heard it though.
Bridge Commander, basically, it's a TNG era game. It was the first game. It's like the predecessor to Bridge Crew in many ways, in the sense that, you know, you're the captain on beginning on a Galaxy class ship, and ultimately you end up on a Sovereign class, but you're the captain, you have a first officer sitting next to you, you have, you know, your helm, you have your navigator, and you have your engineer.
Okay.
And you click different windows to issue orders. You can, and if you want to get involved more hands-on, you can actually control the combat or control the systems yourself. It was a very addictive game for its time. Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner did voiceover work for it.
Oh, cool.
That game is one of the better Star Trek games. But at the same time, that game was not an exploration game so much. That game was mostly a combat game.
Okay. Well,
but because it sold you the idea of being on the bridge, you kind of go along with it. You know what I mean?
Sure. Also, I think the Borg did a lot for making that kind of video game okay, because, mm-hmm. you know, if you go around blowing up a bunch of Klingons or Romulans, it's like, well, we've spent all these years hearing that, you know, they're people too, and we should try to learn and to understand them and make peace with them rather than just blow them up. But with the Borg, it's a little different. It's okay to just blow them up, I guess. Although then Hugh taught us that we can't just blow up the Borg.
That's right. Borgs are people too, damn it.
I remember there was one Borg video game. I can't even remember what it was called, but it was hosted by and I'm trying to look it up in memory alpha right now. It was hosted by John DeLancey.
Star Trek Borg.
Oh, it was just that? Star Trek Borg? Okay, yeah.
Well, yeah, it was a video. It was all video.
It was all video.
If I remember.
Yeah, I remember that kind of game was not as successful as it wanted to be because the video stuff interfered with the gameplay.
Yep.
And I remember, like, whenever you died, you got assimilated, Q would wake you up, like, and he was in Borg regalia, and he would say, calling all Borg.
Yeah.
And I got sick of that really fast.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't work out very well. But like you said, there were a bunch of games during that era that were being made like that.
Sure.
A lot of video-driven stuff.
Yeah, I think there was one, like, Klingon Academy or something, one that had Robert O'Reilly as Gowron in it.
Right. Well, yeah, okay. So, yeah, we can sidetrack into that. Now, that was another Star Trek game that was actually pretty good called Starfleet Academy. No, there was a sequel called Klingon Academy. Starfleet Academy, though, takes place during the movie era, and it was the last time, in reality, the last time William Shatner, George Takei, and Walter Koenig played the characters.
Oh, cool.
I think, right? Because I don't think... I mean, Shatner did that Oscar thing, but he really wasn't in character.
No. He was...
And in Starfleet Academy, he is playing James Kirk. On video, wearing his uniform, the whole bit. And the conceit is that, you know, Kirk goes back to Starfleet Academy because Sulu, between, I guess, Star Trek 5 and 6, Sulu becomes head of Starfleet Academy for a little while for some reason.
Okay.
So the Enterprise drops him off on Earth, and Kirk gives like a kind of a commencement speech to the incoming cadets or some kind of nonsense.
Sure.
I forget what it was. And throughout the game, you know, that Kirk and Sulu and Chekov all get involved in these missions with these cadets that you're part of, these Starfleet cadets that you're a part of. And it was a lot of fun, you know. It was the last time we got to see those guys in character.
Huh.
And the graphics were pretty good for the time. Yeah, it was, like I said, it was like put on like the movie era sets and stuff like that. So,
oh, cool. Okay. I'm just gonna watch the playthrough of this on YouTube when we finish.
Yeah, the intro is really cool. I think Ron Jones did the music for it. It's a nice piece of music. You'll enjoy it. So that was a lot of fun, and that game did well enough, as you mentioned, that they did a sequel called Klingon Academy, which Christopher Plummer is in.
Oh, okay.
As Chang.
Nice.
Which was also really well done. Wow. Obviously, you know, doing it from a Klingon perspective.
Sure.
But it was a lot of fun. Interplay did some cool games in the mid-90s. And we can get into one other game that they made, that they wanted to make, that ultimately has become like this holy grail game, which is called Secret of Vulcan Fury.
Oh, I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised because it got aborted. When Starfleet Academy came out, it had a trailer in front of it for this game. And it was the original cast. It was basically the sequel to Judgment Rites in a lot of ways.
Okay.
But the technology was far more advanced. It was like heavy-duty 3D modeling. Like, they put out this trailer that, like blew everybody's socks off. I mean, it was the tech had made such a huge quantum leap. Like, you can look it up online and you'll see what I mean.
Uh-huh.
The modeling on everything was just absolutely tremendous. And, you know, the whole cast was going to do it. And I think it was supposed to come out in 1999, I believe. And the company grossly underestimated how much it was going to cost to produce.
Huh.
So ultimately the project got aborted. But the cast, as far as I know, all recorded their voices, so those voice tracks are out there somewhere.
Oh, interesting.
Although I did hear that at one point they were going to have somebody come in and do a McCoy impersonation because DeForest Kelly's health was deteriorating.
Oh. Well, yeah. But I mean, when they did the Futurama episode, they just didn't have the Dr. McCoy character say anything.
Right.
That was their solution.
Yeah. But, you know, in a video game, it's a little harder.
Sure.
Anyway, that ended up not happening, but it would, that was also going to be written by Dorothy Fontana, and it was going to be about kind of an earlier attempt at unification, I think, between the Vulcans and the Romulans.
Okay.
And John Meredith Lucas, who was a producer, writer, and director for the original series, was going to, I think, quote unquote, direct the cutscenes and the thing. So it was going to have a real, like, real true TOS flavor to it.
Oh, wow.
But again, like I said, it ended up not happening. And it's one of the great disappointments. For anybody who's listening who's interested, I would highly recommend digging up the trailers online. It'll break your heart to see like what they had already like mapped out. It could have been the definitive Star Trek game.
Huh.
Yeah, which I don't think we have.
No. So look it up, everybody. The Secret of Vulcan Fury. Yep, Jared's typing away. He's looking right now, everyone.
Huh. Oh, interesting.
So anyway.
That's too bad.
But, you know, there's been other games that have been a lot of fun, too. The TNG cast did that game called Final Unity, which I think came out not long after the series went off the air, which had all the voices of the cast, and I think had some pretty sophisticated character modeling for the era. You know, it was a lot of pointing and clicking, and that was more of a traditional adventure game, like, you know, where you'd have to, like, deal with negotiation,
yeah,
and adventure, and, you know, more traditional game like that.
Okay,
that was probably, in my opinion, the best TNG game. I'm sorry, what?
Okay, no, I think I did play this at one point. I must not have played it very much, but this definitely looks familiar. Oh, wow, that is really good for the time.
Oh, the Vulcan Fury thing?
No, yeah. The Final Unity.
Oh, Final Unity is very good, yeah. Yeah, that was like mid-90s, like 94, 95, huh. Something like that. You know, that's when the early 3D like video cards came out and stuff like that, and they started getting a little more adventurous, I think, with the modeling of pet characters and so on. So that was a fun game. But, you know, there's been a lot of turkeys through the years, too. I mean, the most recent one, I think, was, right before Into Darkness came out, that Star Trek game, that Kelvin Star Trek game that was supposed to be, you know, kind of a first-person shooter where you're fighting the Gorn.
Oh.
That was supposed to be, like, some sort of, like, half-assed tie-in to Into Darkness.
That sounds like it's doomed to failure.
It was buggy. It just didn't work well. It was just, it had all sorts of problems. It was a piece of shit. It really was.
Huh.
And it didn't work out. It was a huge bomb. The best part about that game was the ad for it, which had William Shatner playing the game with a Gorn.
Oh, and they, yeah, that's right.
You've seen it. And they have like a falling out, and yeah, they start recreating the Pfeiffer Arena. Right.
I remember that.
That was a lot of fun. But that's basically the best part of the game, and Shatner's not even in the damn game. And then J.J. Abrams attempted to use that as an excuse for why Into Darkness underperformed, which has to be one of the strangest excuses I've ever heard.
Wow.
For
a movie underperforming. That's ridiculous. He blamed it on the Italian video game.
He blamed it on the video game.
No video game has ever sunk a movie franchise.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it really mattered one way or the other. Anyway, that was a real dud. I think the last game before that was maybe Star Trek Online.
Okay.
Which obviously started as a.
Yeah, I played that. I did not enjoy that.
Did you play it on the PC?
I did. And maybe there's a better way to play it. Did you play it?
I played it when it finally hit the consoles, I think, last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I played it for a while, but I find it repetitive.
Yeah.
The stories aren't engaging enough to keep me coming back.
See, one of the things that was great about the 25th anniversary in Judgment Rites is it's like seven little missions, right? And so each of those missions is really well fleshed out. But the thing about any kind of massive multiplayer online RPG is in order to have a huge sandbox where, you know, it's a whole world you can explore, or a whole galaxy, the actual gameplay itself can't be as well fleshed out, because you can flesh out seven little missions. You can't flesh out an entire galaxy. And so there's the illusion of variety and the illusion of a whole world, but it's really just go get this thing and shoot these people, and that's it, over and over and over again. And I played a little bit of MMORPGs, not really. I mean, I had a friend who played World of Warcraft, but I never really got into it.
Mm.
And this came out a couple years after that fade, after that fad was already on winding down. And it didn't add anything new to it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I never really got into Warcraft. I tried a few times, but it really wasn't my thing.
No, I mean, the only good thing to come out of World of Warcraft is that one South Park episode. And it's just
that, which is amazing.
Yeah, it might be their best episode ever. But it just, it's not in the Star Trek universe at all.
Yeah, no. But you know what? The game is doing okay, though.
Is it?
I mean, it clearly has a fan base. Yeah, They keep adding new expansions for it. And when I started playing the game, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of curiosity going on, so there was a lot of people in it. But you go into, like, the general lobby areas at, like, Space Dock and stuff like that, and there were a lot of people running around in there. So, yeah. What's that old saying? Horses for courses. Each his own.
And next year we can play Star Trek : Horses for Courses. It's a horse racing game between Captain Kirk and Captain Picard in the Nexus.
I'd watch.
That would not be terrible. See, that's, you know, they could do like a racing game, you know, like Mario Kart or whatever, where you can take different ships through different courses. That wouldn't be terrible.
That'd be kind of goofy fun, I guess. Yeah, well, no, why not?
There's one episode of Voyager where they do a race where, like, Tom Paris and B'Elanna do a race. And the thing that's cool about that episode is they have special, like, racing uniforms. And it's, like, the only time...
Oh, my God. The only time you ever see them.
But they're good-looking uniforms. I can't remember the name of the episode right now. But they could do something like that. I mean, racing games are very popular. Also, I mean, one of the reasons why I played Mario Kart a lot with my friends is it's also a non-violent game, right? I mean, anything that's sports or racing related generally does not involve you killing people. So it might fit with Star Trek a little better.
Anyway. It has a kind of – Star Trek has kind of a – you know, hopefully in the future game developers will figure out a way to really – they'll find the secret formula that makes for a great Star Trek game.
Did you ever play that game Portal?
A little bit, briefly.
Because that's a non-violent first-person shooter, and I think that might be a good model for Star Trek-type stuff.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
And that Portal came out 10 years ago, so, I mean, it's been out there.
Has it been that long?
It has, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The years start coming, and they don't stop coming, Brian.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway,
but let's pivot a little bit and talk about some other games, not necessarily video games.
Yeah, by all means.
I'm much more of a tabletop gamer than a video gamer, and there are a variety of different board games and whatnot, like we mentioned earlier, in the Star Trek universe. And there's actually a new Star Trek RPG coming out, and I've just read about this. I haven't seen it. We're gonna try to get a copy and do a review of it. There's an article on IO9, and it about the how it comes in a board. You can buy this role playing game in a Borg cube, and you open up the cube, and there are different slots in it, like a chest of drawers, and they have different cards or dice or the manual or whatever.
It's super cool looking.
Yeah, it looks really cool. It's produced by Modifus, which I'm not familiar with that game producer's name, but there's a fancy Game Master screen. It comes with little miniatures. I'm not sure what universe it's set in. The font looks like it's TOS. It has some kind of specialty dice. See, with a Star Trek role-playing game, you can do a little bit more of the moral dilemmas and whatnot than maybe you can in a video game because you're interacting with actual people. And so this might, and there have been a couple Star Trek RPGs in the past. I know there was one by a company called FASA in the 80s, which I played a lot. And the thing that was, I don't know how much, the thing I liked the most about the FASA game is the character creation system was a little drawn out, and you were basically like telling the story of your character before they got to whatever ship they were on. And so you went through the academy and you picked whatever your major was. And then you rolled for what your cadet cruise was, and you could basically have X number of different ships that you'd served on beforehand, and so your characters would be different ages. Like, if you didn't roll white, you might be younger, and there could be advantages to being younger, but then the disadvantages, you'd have less experience, and so making your character was a way of telling its own story, and it set you up in universe really, really well. You could go to command school if you were the guy who became the captain, and we didn't play the actual game that much, to be honest, but they definitely did a good job with it. It definitely felt authentic.
Yeah, and that was another instance where, like, it was not a quick cash-in, tie-in license or anything like that. The people who put that series together, like, were big Star Trek fans. Like, they would, I don't know if you remember, but they would, like, in some of the expansions, they would have, like, very detailed stories about the cultures and everything else and reference other things from, like, the series or the movies or something like that.
Yeah.
It was pretty, like, elaborate. They had all sorts of manuals. They had ship manuals. Like,
sure. Yep.
They were putting detail into, like, different classes of ships, like the ones that we knew, like the Refit or the Excelsior.
The Reliant.
Or, you know, whatever. The Reliant. But they were putting in detail that we were not going to see in any other form for a while after that. Like, real, true, quote-unquote, specs.
Sure.
You know, so they FASA kind of filled that void for a while. They had blueprints of the Enterprise that I owned that were really cool. They were really good for a while, FASA. It kind of broke my heart when they, you know, lost the license.
Yeah, I can't remember when that happened, but I know role-playing games were very big in the 80s and the early 90s, and then video games stole a lot of their thunder. But in the pre-memory alpha Star Trek universe, the FASA source books were basically as good as it got.
Mm-hmm. They really were. They were so good. They were readable on their own. You didn't even have to play the damn game.
Oh, totally. Yeah, and they had a good space combat simulator that came out right after Search for Spock. Or I don't know if it came out right after that, but that was the tie-in, was that the cover was the three Klingons from Search for Spock, the three main.
Right, and didn't they have like a hexagonal game board you had to have?
Yep. And you had little ships that were little hexes that you could move around.
Right. Which I guess is kind of a throwback to that Starfleet Battles thing that was like was big in like the 70s and early 80s. It was like an unofficial role-playing starship combat thing that I guess wasn't licensed. It was big among fans who liked starship combat.
Uh-huh.
I think that FASA expansion was kind of a nod toward that.
Oh, cool.
You know, straight up starship combat.
Yeah, which you can tie into the gameplay of you can have ship-based missions, and then your guys can, when you get to the planet, your guys can beam down and have a landing party mission as well.
Right, right. You can have a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and so Star Trek Adventures is the new RPG. We'll see how well it plays. Maybe we could do if we have the opportunity where we could all be in the same room together, we could do a playthrough and stream it on YouTube the way it's so popular with the kids these days.
And that'd be fun.
That would not be terrible. That would not be terrible.
It would not suck. No.
At the end, we would be a merry man. I would be a merry man.
That'd be fun to try something like that.
Yeah.
We need more group gatherings.
We do. It's hard. Those are hard to organize when we're all in different parts of the world. Now, if we wanted something a little simpler than an RPG, there are, like I mentioned, there are plenty of good Star Trek board games you could play. I think the most successful one recently has been Star Trek Catan, which is an adaptation of the Settlers of Catan board game that's been around for about 20 years. I don't know if you've ever played Catan or if you've seen the version Will Wheaton plays on tabletop. Did you watch that episode?
No, but I've seen the game itself around. Okay. I think it's a movie era board game.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Well, movie or TOS? I can't remember which, but it's
Like TOS movies.
Yeah, okay.
It's got like the Refit on the cover or something like that.
Yeah, and he plays it. Will Wheaton plays it. It's actually the only episode of Tabletop I've watched all the way through. One of very few, because I just never got into it the way some other people did, even though I know it's popular. But there's the episode where they play Star Trek Catan. He plays against his son and Jerry Ryan. And so that's a nice little reunion there. Or not even a reunion, because, Seven and Wesley were never on screen together, unfortunately.
Right.
But if you haven't seen that, I recommend you watch that.
Yeah, I'll check that out.
Yeah. As a game, though, the Star Trek Settlers isn't that great because it's just playing off an existing property. But there is one that came out in, I think, 2011 called Star Trek Fleet Captains, which is fantastic. It's done by WizKids, and what they do is they take all these like Star Trek micro machines. So it comes with like 20 different ships. Half of them are Klingon ships, half of them are Federation ships. So I remember buying it and definitely feeling like I got my money's worth out of it. You have different like cards from every every era that you take and you put together in a deck, kind of like a Magic the Gathering type of thing. And then one side plays the Klingons and one side plays the Federation. It opens up and the board is like all these black hexagonal cards. I guess when we explore space, we'll do it in hexagons. And then when your ship goes to an unexplored area of space, you flip the card over and it'll be a nebula or a planet or whatever. And then you encounter different dilemmas and they're taken from the whole franchise. So you might have a tribal infestation or you might run into Q or whatnot. And you can shoot each other, but you don't have to. There are like combat-related missions or exploration-related missions. And then I think they did a Ferengi expansion where there are commerce-related missions. But it definitely captures the feel better than any other game that I've seen. It's the setup time.
Wow.
The setup time is really rough, though. I mean, it takes a while to get going. And the rulebook was written extremely badly. But it was fun. I'm glad I got it. I didn't get to play it as much as I wanted to.
Wow, that's a hell of a reference for it, though. I mean, that's...
Yeah, no, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, Fleet Captains, produced by WizKids. Yeah, and then the thing that's cool is you put your crew, you can draw it from all different properties, which any Star Trek game should do that, just like Timelines did. So
I was about to say Timelines
yeah,
does that.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So you can have Captain Janeway and Mr. Spock and Constable Odo and Data all together if you want to. So you can mix and match really nice, and there's a good feel to it.
Cool.
Yeah. Then another game, and then this is the one I told you about. I played it in Vegas. I couldn't come with you and Kayla
right.
to one event because I was getting the run through called Star Trek Ascendancy. And this is
right.
this is a resource management kind of engine building game that the premise is, instead of being like an episode or a season of Star Trek in a box, they try to look at this macro universe, which is different, right? And so every turn of the game represents 10 years of civilization building. And, you know, again, you're
oh, wow.
Romulan, Klingon, and Federation. Yeah, so it's like you're establishing colonies and making advancements in technology. And it's not – I don't think it's as fun for that reason, because it's more fun to think of myself as – the captain on an episode on the ship rather than trying to build a civilization, right? But it's still
right.
pretty cool. And I think they did an expansions for it. When I played it was just the three main powers, but then I think they've done expansions for the Cardassians and the Ferengi as well at this point.
I remember the board being very pretty and
yes.
the whole pieces and everything. It was
yeah.
very nicely presented.
Yeah, very good production values on the components.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the gentleman from Gale Force 9, the company that did it, he took a lot of time that day to show me and walk me through it. He let me film the whole thing, so if we ever wanted to use it for something, so I was very generous with him.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay, but the granddaddy of all Star Trek games that I ever played, and I don't know if you ever played it, Brian, was the Decipher card game from 1994.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I know of it, obviously,
yeah.
but I didn't play it.
Yeah, so this came out basically the year after Magic the Gathering hit, and they realized there was money in this industry. And it's the same idea where you could be a Romulan faction, Klingon faction, or the Federation. You'd build your deck of the different cards you wanted, so the different ships or the different type of powers that you wanted to have access to. And the thing I remember that was cool about it is there were mission cards, and you and your opponent would set up a timeline of all these different planets. So you'd put your, you know, six different missions down or different planets or sectors of space you'd explore, and your opponent would put theirs down. And then you could move your ship, which, you know, a little card, along the timeline. You'd explore these different planets. You'd encounter dilemmas that your opponent would plant under the missions for you to have to deal with. Or you could find artifacts that you would plant under the missions that would be like benefits for solving them. And I played this into the ground. I mean... I knew I had a problem one day when I went to the comic book store in Salt Lake in Dr. Volt's Comics, and I didn't have enough money to buy my comics because I was buying so many Star Trek cards. And I remember the store owner said, "Which is it going to be, Jared? What's your addiction this week?" And when I got the cards instead of the comics, I realized, "Oh, I've got a problem here." But really thoroughly designed game. It lasted for years. They did a second edition, and again, before Memory Alpha, this this, the kind of research that went into this was what you needed to have access to be a Star Trek fan. And every game that has come after it, as I've seen, has kind of followed in that, where they look at this game and say, okay, these are the different Romulans that are cool, so those are the Romulans we need to have. And these are the different named Klingon ships that are cool, and so we need to have those. So, yeah, I really like this game. I don't know if I would enjoy playing it right now, but it was so big at the time. Yeah. We had like a
Yeah, I played a little Magic for a while.
Oh, did you? Okay, so you're familiar with the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Magic the Gathering is basically the ability to print money for Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah. Yep, still is.
Yeah, I can't believe it. 24 years later, and it's still making money. I can't believe they never did a movie for Magic the Gathering.
Well, I guess it's hard to adapt. Look how much trouble they've had adapting D&D.
Yeah, good point. Although they're trying to do another, they're finally doing another one.
They should. There's so many good stories. I mean, we're getting off tangent, yeah. But really quickly, I mean, there's a lot of like Dungeons and Dragons novels that are really good.
Yeah, the problem with Dungeons and Dragons, though, is their most valuable intellectual property is Driz Doerden, the Dark Elf. And the whole idea of the Dark Elves is they're just like elves, except instead of being good, they're evil, and instead of being fair-skinned, they're dark-skinned. And there's no way that premise is going to be made into a movie in the current environment.
Yeah.
For reasons so obvious, I hope I don't need to spell them out anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird how there are some intellectual properties that can be well made into games, some that can't, and then there's some games that can become intellectual properties, and then some games that can't. I mean, I think the Clue movie from the mid-80s is fantastic, and I never thought movie based on Clue would be good. But it's terrific. It's better than the game ever was.
I always enjoyed the game.
Okay, the game.
Was it simple? Yes, it was simple.
Yeah.
There was also a VCR version of that
game. Oh, that's right. And they introduced a few new characters like Mrs. Peach or Miss Peach.
Right.
Yeah.
Miss Peach. Very good, Jared.
Miss Peach did not suck. She was okay. She was okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the Decipher card game, I love that. Man. Yeah, I remember there was some kind of a collector's edition tin that, you know, was like $100, which was a lot of money for me back then. But I made sure I got that. And it had all the cards with like a silver border. Did I ever play with it? No. Did I ever even open it? Absolutely not.
Of course not.
No. And then I remember one Christmas morning, my friends from high school who we all played this together like every Thursday afternoon, we called each other to tell each other what cards we'd gotten for Christmas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like it was so intense. And I had gotten a copy of the ultra-rare Future Enterprise from All Good Things.
Mm-hmm.
And I sold it to my chemistry teacher for much more than it was worth.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, I think he wrote me a check for like $125 for it.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Well, it was the only ultra-rare card there was. It had the best weapons value of any ship in the game.
Oh, my God. That's so great.
Yeah.
Oh, you totally got over on your chemistry teacher. I love it.
Yeah, that was a well designed game. So I don't know. Are there any other Star Trek games we haven't talked about that might be germane to our conversation?
There probably are. I mean, we probably should have qualified this at the beginning. But Jared and I are mostly talking about games that we have some kind of experience with.
Sure.
There's plenty. There are games going back for Star Trek going back. There's like video games that go back to like the early mainframes that were written in like BASIC in the early 70s.
Oh, wow.
Some which are pretty sophisticated for their time. So there's been like so many Star Trek games, both official and unofficial, through the years.
Yeah, there's also, I guess, some people have made like actual versions of 3D chess, right?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's ever been an official video game version of three-dimensional chess. I mean, the Franklin Mint obviously made the actual board with the pieces and everything that you could buy back in the day. But yeah, I don't think there's ever been a video game version of 3D chess.
The other thing they could do is there are a couple of futuristic games that they talk about. Like in Peak Performance, they play this game called Stratagema, if you remember that, which maybe they could do something with that. It looked really cool at the time, right? You know, it's basically like a Nine Man's Morris thing, but computerized in 3D and all Star Trek-y. But they could do something with that, or, you know, Domjot, of course, from Tapestry. Maybe they could try to do something with Domjot. Or there's a game they reference a couple times called Parisi Squares, which we never see it, but we know you wear these blue and black uniforms when you play Parisi Squares. And it first was introduced in the episode, the Bynars episode, which is the best episode of the first season. If we do an episode on the first season, there are three or four episodes which are actually really good. And yeah, Minuet, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then in the episode Future Imperfect, where they bring Minuet back, they do a subtle callback to that episode to sort of tease that they're going to bring her back, where Riker's quote-unquote son has been playing Parisi Squares, and he's wearing the same blue and black uniform.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. That's good, Jared. I never caught that.
Really good continuity. But
there is one Star Trek game that needs to be made.
Oh, let's hear it.
Real. Fizbin.
Oh, Fizbin.
You can only have that card on Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, look at you. You've got a full Fizbin. Oh, do I?
How lucky you are, Spock. What are the odds of getting a Royal Fizbin?
I have never calculated.
The odds. Well, they're astronomical, believe me. Oh, I missed that stuff. That was great. Yeah. That was great.
Fizbin, and the guy's so proud of himself because he's like, oh, this game I've never heard of. Of course I'm good at it because I'm awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And Kirk is totally making it up.
As he goes, yeah. Now I need to rewatch that now.
It's always a good time to watch a piece of the action.
Yeah. I loved how it had the piece of the action has Vic from Alice.
Vic Tayback.
Yeah, Vic Tayback. Character Vic Tayback. Yep. He's so good in it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that episode was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Fizbin, I'd forgotten about that. Are there any other games in universe that maybe could be adapted?
There's those kind of silly shooting games that, like, Riker and Picard were playing.
Oh,
like,
yeah, on the range, the marksmanship game.
Yeah, but those are mostly that's just like a more like a traditional shooting type game, I would think.
Yeah, okay, wait, no, I'm just remembering. I'm embarrassed I didn't remember this before, but in Deep Space Nine, there's a Ferengi game called Tongo, which they play throughout the whole series, and it's basically it's like some kind of really advanced poker style game. Mm-hmm. And they could definitely, and they have like a roulette wheel and a set of cards, and of course because they're alien, the cards aren't shaped in the traditional way that our playing cards are shaped. But they could do something with that. Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't made something of that. See, here's the problem with adapting intellectual properties as board games and with video games, because there's so much money in it, there's more demand for it, so this isn't as big of an issue. But with board games, the problem is you have people who may be able to design really good games, and then you have people who have the access to the intellectual property, right? And so if you and I come up with the best Doctor Who board game in the world, but the company we work for doesn't have the Doctor Who license, it's never going to go anywhere, right? Yeah. And so there's the Venn diagram of people who have access to that stuff and people who can do good stuff with it, is the circles are barely touching, right? So that's the challenge with doing something like this. The only example I can think of that's really good for adapting intellectual properties is there's this company, I think it's based in Minnesota, called Fantasy Flight Games, which has the Star Wars license, and they've done really good stuff in recent years. So maybe somehow they'll be able to get the Star Trek license and can do some stuff with it. But that's just one of the challenges for one of these type of things. We may come up with a great adaptation of how to play Tongo, but if we're not on the phone with the CBS and Paramount people, it'll never go anywhere.
Right.
And again, we're seeing CBS and Paramount is having trouble just getting a TV show off the ground, let alone a board game based on the TV show.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Discovery will be a huge hit.
Yes.
And it will spur new video games, new board games, new RPGs, new everything.
Yeah, because that's how you really get in, you know, enmeshed in it, is when you're able to join the universe with your friends or strangers through an immersive experience like this. Maybe on a tabletop, maybe in virtual reality. Who knows?
Yep. So hopefully the future is bright.
Yes. Let's see what's out there again.
Indeed.
All right, well, I guess that about wraps it up for us. Thanks for listening to our discussion about a variety of different games in the Star Trek universe. Thanks for listening to our indulgent eulogy for Mr. Adam West.
Yes.
We also want to just mention, of course, that our captain, Kayla Iacovino, isn't here with us. She's off exploring a part of our own world, and she's not able to join us to record today. So So Kayla, we miss you. And Kayla, if you're listening, we hope yes, you made it till the end of this episode.
Okay.
See, and Kayla.
And on that note.
Yeah, well, Kayla assures me she has her first Treknikdote about Moby Dick, but I don't know what it is yet, so I'm going to share a little one from myself from the other day. So as a writer and as a journalist, they train you to not use cliches, right? It's a sign of lazy writing if you use cliches. And so sometimes when I see an opportunity to use a cliche, I'll try to change it and put in something else, either from my own devising or something from Star Trek if I can't come up with it. And the other day I was writing to someone and I was going to use the phrase, any friend of so-and-so's is a friend of mine. And I didn't want to say that because it's a cliche. And so I thought, what am I going to say instead? And I remembered that line from The Voyage Home where Spock and Sarek are talking at the end. And he says, your crewmates are people of good character. And Spock says, they are my friends. And so instead of saying, any friend of so-and-so's is a friend of mine, I said, any friend of so-and-so's is a person of good character. And so thank you, Mr. Sarek, for helping me with that. Or Ambassador Sarek, I should say.
Yeah, I love that scene.
Oh, it's so endearing. Those two are perfect. They're just perfect together.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell her I feel fine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. All righty. Well.
Anyway.
Someday we'll do a deep.
It's been lovely talking to you all again.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for joining us. 37 episodes. We are going to be excited about doing some more timely ones in the future, but we'll also do some deeper dives into Star Trek pasts. Let us know what kind of stuff you want us to talk about. We have done episodes based on viewer suggestions, so put it in the comment section or tweet us or put it on our Facebook. All that good internet stuff.
Yes. Alrighty.
Alrighty. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everybody.